Today is August 5th, the year 2003. We're in East Lansing, Michigan. I am Professor Jeff Charnley interviewing Scott Vaughn for the MSU Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial of the institution to be commemorated in the year 2005. Mr. Vaughn is the Assistant Director of the Honors College at Michigan State. And as you can see, Mr. Vaughn, we have a tape recorder for this interview today. Do you give us permission to tape?
I certainly do.
Okay. I'd like to start with just some initial personal background questions, professional questions also. Where were you born and raised, and when were you born?
I was born in September 22nd, 1942, in St. Louis, Missouri. I lived in St. Louis until the age of 8, when my family moved to a small town south of St. Louis, Potosi, Missouri.
Potosi.
Mm-hmm. I lived there until I went to the University of Missouri in Columbia in 1960. And I was there for 6 years, and I earned a bachelor's degree in a secondary education, social studies education, and an MED in history of education.
Okay.
I taught 2 years subsequently in the public schools of Hazelwood, Missouri, which is North St. Louis County. And I then came in 1968 to Michigan State University to pursue a PhD in the history in the philosophy of education, which I did earn here. Mm-hmm. After I started my job at the Honors College.
Okay. Who was it that attracted you to Michigan State?
George Free, with whom I had studied a bit for my master's degree at Missouri, and for whom I had served as an undergraduate and graduate assistant there.
Okay, and so he recruited you?
He recruited me, and we had a really fine program here at the time, so I was happy that he did.
Mm-hmm. What attracted you to your dissertation topic?
I had actually decided on my dissertation topic before I came up here because I had become really fascinated with the work of Wittgenstein, and I had been steeped, so far as you can be steeped at that point, in the Deweyan tradition, so I knew I wanted to do something that would compare Dewey and Wittgenstein about some fundamental issues in education.
Mm-hmm. Where did you end up doing most of your research? Was
here.
It right here?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Had to do an interlibrary loan on a number of things, but our library has a really fine Wittgenstein collection. They have all the original works and everything also in translation, and they have the full shot, a very good Wittgenstein source.
Uh-huh. Okay. The you mentioned you were working at the Honors College, and how was it that you came to that job?
In 1969, Frank Blackington, who was one of the faculty members in history and philosophy, in philosophy of education, was selected as the director of the Honors College. And so in 70, he was building a staff and sent out the word, and I interviewed with both him and the rest of the staff, and I was selected there. At the time, the Honors College was rostered for a director, an associate director, and something like 4 or 5 assistant directors. The assistant directors were really sort of super graduate assistantships and were all really academic advisors rather than assistant directors.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was the title at the time, and I started work there in 1970. The summer of 1970.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot going on campus at that time. Certainly.
There were lots of things going on campus at that time, yes.
Yeah. What do you remember about maybe some of your first impressions of the university? Had you come to the campus before?
I came in 68.
Yeah. In 68, okay.
Oh, well, I had visited twice before that, around Easter time.
Okay.
And one of those, which year would it have been, probably Easter of 69, probably it was,
okay.
It could have been 70,
mm-hmm.
Was the year of the big blizzard. And when I got here at Easter, there was a snow pile on top of the area that used to be the tennis courts over mm-hmm. by the Spartan Stadium. Mm-hmm. It must have been 80 feet tall and covered the entire area. And I thought at the time, I wonder.
Coming from Missouri.
Right. Exactly.
Quite a pile.
Like everyone else, when I first came here in the spring, when I came for the actual job, I was absolutely blown away by the campus, mm-hmm. How beautiful the campus was. And I knew that we had some good people here in the field I wanted to work. But I didn't know that I was going to be so lucky as to be here during the time that Stephen Toulmin was a faculty member. Steve and his wife came here every fall term for 4 or 5 years, and they had appointments in at other institutions the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And I met then, as a consequence of building a doctoral committee, I met Ronald Suter mm-hmm. from the philosophy department, who was a member of my doctoral committee, and Ron is a close friend as well as an intellectual mentor, shall we say, mm-hmm. as is George Furey, the person I came here to study with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that intellectual genealogy is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, how we get to where we are sometimes.
Yeah, it really is. I have always felt very lucky because the years that I was at Missouri, they had a very young history department. Mm-hmm. And although my degree was social studies education, I was a history teacher. That's uh-huh. all I ever taught. Yeah. And they had a very young faculty, some of whom were already becoming distinguished, but who became very distinguished in later years. Harold Woodman, in Lester Kirkendall, and a number of other people who were really top flight historians.
How would you describe the Honors College when you first arrived, in terms of mission or?
I didn't really know much about it until I went over to interview, and then I had to kind of bone up on it. I knew that I had been in an honors program at the University of Missouri as an undergraduate student until I declared a major in education. And at Missouri, unlike here at MSU, secondary majors were majors in the College of Education as well as elementary majors. And mm-hmm. so when I declared my major and became a student in the College of Education, I was no longer eligible for their honors program because it was an arts and sciences program only. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I learned about the program here is that it was not an arts and sciences program only. It was a university-wide program, and that struck me from my own experience, as a very positive mm-hmm. factor in it. It took me a while, of course, as it would anyone, to get my feet wet and to learn all of the ropes. Never learn all the ropes. but I was really impressed with the program from the very beginning. The faculty, the staff who were associated with the program were really dedicated and hardworking people. They were committed to the idea of a university-wide honors program that really brought students together from all over the campus, and which provided them with a real great deal of flexibility in planning their program. I think the people who started this program in the 50s were smart beyond what they probably even anticipated themselves. I think they probably adopted the model they did in part because they viewed it as being a cheap one, mm-hmm. But in so doing, they came up with probably the key factor in the honors program here at MSU. Mm-hmm. And that's really the flexibility.
Yeah. Who were some of those founders that you saw?
I never met most of the founders. They were 56 is when the program was started. I have met I can't remember the name of the guy who started it, but the memo that got it all rolling was by, I believe, the director of the university college, mm-hmm. then University College. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the name at the moment, but mm-hmm. It went through faculty governance after some studies and was approved in 56, and the first class was actually in 57. Stanley Adzerga was the first director and was director for many years. I have met Stanley, and he's just like the other people who were there when I joined the staff. He was very enthusiastic about what he was doing. I believe he was a professor of humanities, but I'm not certain. About the same time that the Honors College was established, we had an applicant, a successful candidate in the Rhodes Scholarship Program by the name of John Wilson, who was a member of the university football team and an academic All-American. John went on to get a doctorate in English and came back to Michigan State and was professor of English and the second director of the Honors College and the first assistant provost for undergraduate education at MSU. He was the author of the Crewe Report, not the Q Report, but the Crewe Report, which was the I can't even remember what the acronym stands for now.
Only David Scott would remember the acronym. Committee to Review Undergraduate Education,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Right. And the one that David Scott knew was Committee on Undergraduate Education, because the Crewe Report was issued in the late 60s, or maybe in 1970, about the time I started at the Honors College. So at that time we have Frank Blackington, who was director, Dorothy Arata, who was a lipid biochemist from food science, I think, was the associate director. And we had a range of people who have, all of whom, except for me, have gone on to other things. I liked what I did so much that I never really searched for a position after I finished my PhD. I just stayed with what I was doing.
What were your main duties when you first...
When I first started, they were mainly advising students. Advising students, and I had some liaison responsibilities with some departments, but that was not much in those days. The provost at the time, I believe, was Jake Neville.
Okay.
I'm not positive, but I think he was. And I gather that he had, when Blackington was selected as director, he was advised to maintain a low profile. And we certainly did maintain a low profile in certain ways during those years. There was not a lot of contact with other units and so on. Mm-hmm. Although in Frank's period as director, he really broke the barrier on Rhodes Scholar selections. We had three very quick ones. Don't remember the exact years, but probably Alan Verplank was the first. Alan was an English major and is now practicing law in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Roy P., who was a philosophy major and who is now director of the Stanford Research Institute's all of their educational programs. He had, when he came back from England, he took a position at the Bank Street College of Education in Manhattan. Actually, it was kind of funny because he left the States to go to Oxford, where he got a DPhil with Jerome Bruner, who was there as a visiting professor. And then he came back. He went to work at the Bank Street College of Education in Manhattan, and then he became the dean of the College of he became a faculty member at Northwestern, where he founded an entire program based on some complicated learning resources issues, and then became the dean and then went to Stanford Research International. He's a leading thinker in the development of computer programs for instruction of young children.
Oh, so, and very early.
And very early. And he attributes that to the kind of education he was able to do here at MSU, where he did a lot of work in psychology and philosophy and linguistics and that area that used to be called artificial intelligence until and is now, I think, called cognitive science. So he was able to, he spoke at an Arts and Letters commencement a few years ago and said he was able to have an undergraduate major at Michigan State in cognitive science when no one knew such a thing existed.
That's interesting.
And then, of course, Paul Hunt, our own Paul Hunt, was a winner there, and another young man. And then it kind of ballooned. I think we've had 13 since 1970.
So the driving force really was Professor Blackington and his directorship?
Well, he left in 74, I think it was. I don't remember who the third director was. He was only there for a year, I think, in between Wilson. Wilson and his successor and Blackington all left to be college presidents.
I see.
Different kinds of places, but the college presidents nonetheless.
Interesting springboard.
It looked that way for a while. Yeah. So when Blackington left, we had three acting directors for third and third and third. And here's where I'm having trouble with names. One was Dorothy Arata, who had left the Honors College to become assistant provost for undergraduate education. She was the commencement czar and all of those things in those years when we were still having commencements. outdoors in the stadium and had to be prepared to rush indoors somewhere else in case of rain. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not coming up with their names.
This is before Professor Lammers? Or no, Don this Lammers was later?
Don Lammers is later.
Later.
This is the interim between Blackington and Jim Pickering, who came from English. Mm-hmm. The two people I can describe, one was a historian, diplomatic historian, who had been dean of the College of Arts and Letters for a while.
Right. And Paul Varg was that?
Paul Varg, thank you.
Paul Varg. He was on my committee.
Okay.
I was his last graduate student.
Okay. Right. And the other was the first dean and the longest-serving dean of Lyman Briggs College, which was a college at that point.
And we can check that.
Yeah. And they came in, and they would be there half-time and half a day and do something else half a day, and they kind of took turns. Mm-hmm. And we just had to kind of wing it on the staff at that point. We just had to do what we could do. And we did pretty well, we came into the new directorship with Jim Pickering from English, who was really a disciple of John Wilson. Mm-hmm. And Wilson left MSU to become a president of a girls' college somewhere, I forget which one, and then later was the provost at is it Virginia Tech that's in Blacksburg, Virginia? Mm-hmm. And then became president of Washington and Lee University, from which he retired. His brother, Patrick Wilson, was at least one, maybe two-term member of the MSU Board of Trustees. They're from up in northern Michigan somewhere. I don't think UP, but maybe.
Who was the president? Was it When you arrived at the university, was that the in-between transition when Walter Adams came, or
I believe there? I'm not certain, but I believe the first year I was at the Honors, certainly when I came here, but maybe even my first year at the Honors College, John Hanna was still president, and then there was the transition period, and then Cliff Wharton was president. Mm-hmm. I believe while Blackington was I mean, I believe, Blackington was still there. Mm-hmm. Because Wharton used to come over and meet with honor students in our lounge and stuff like this.
Was he supportive of the honors program?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the ADS program, he would meet with the ADS students for dinner once a month and things like this. So he was very active with high-achieving students. I don't know about how, I have no idea how open he was to others, but he certainly was open to...
But you saw the alumni distinguished scholars that he met with, he was very...
Yeah.
Open with.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Supportive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And after that interim year with acting directors, Jim Pickering became director of the Honors College. And as I said, he was a faculty member in the English department and a disciple of John Wilson's. I think they had been on the faculty at the same time in the English department, but I'm not certain of that. Jim worked very hard to change the image of the Honors College, or to give it an image, I guess, because we had really been low-key except for the award winners and things of that nature.
Was the program expanding in those years?
The program really expanded. My first job at the Honors College was to organize an orientation procedure for freshman students in the Honors College, because that's the first year we had freshman students in the Honors College. Prior to that, they had always been students who came in and applied for membership on the basis of their MSU record.
I see.
And in 69, the governance system approved a 3-year trial of admitting, entering high school students directly into the program, and they spelled out the criteria which should be used for that. And they authorized a 3-year trial period in which there would be some comparative research and some experimental groups admitted as well. So we had never participated in academic orientation programs before, and that was my first job, to set up the procedures for that. And so we brought in our first class of entering freshman students in 1970. That bumped the numbers a lot. Incidentally, the under Wilson and others, especially under Wilson, there had been a great effort to recruit out-of-state students, but recruit high-ability students. Gordon Sabine in the Office of Admissions and Scholarships and John Wilson worked very closely together. I see in our own internal records lots of form letters that went out from the Honors College and so on. So there was this really close effort at recruiting students, such that in 1970, I remember looking this up one time in the SAT manual, the average SAT score of out-of-state students who were enrolled at MSU in the fall of 1970 was 1,300. That's what was required to become a member of the Honors College. Mm-hmm. There were other things that were required as well, but that they had really been successful in recruiting out-of-state students. MSU was a really good buy in those days educationally, and they used the Honors Program as a marketing tool and were very successful at it. When we started admitting freshmen, we used the criteria that were laid down by Academic Council, and the numbers began to climb rather steadily because we were bringing in students. Students were still becoming members by applying after their first year. Mm-hmm. There was some significant grade inflation in the early 1970s, in large part because of the Vietnam War. To give a person a grade that would flunk them out in 1970 was to hand them a ticket to Vietnam, and a lot of faculty knew that, I think, and a lot of faculty behaved according to their own lights in that respect. But there was great inflation, so we were admitting more. We got up to around 2,800 or so during Blackington's period of during the Blackington regime, and that steadied off and then began to slowly decline over the years, and it declined until our current director came in.
What's the level now of the Honors College?
About 2,300, 2,400.
Have the criteria changed much over the years? They've been relatively constant. How about the, you mentioned the effort of Gordon Sabine and others to attract out-of-state students. Has that push continued, or has MSU backed off some of that out-of-state recruiting?
Well, I think that for a long period of time, the Office of Admissions and Scholarship backed off of it because it was expensive and it was largely ineffective. Mm-hmm. Because while in 1970, 60, late 60s and early 70s, we were a really good value in higher education, as we began to raise tuition, our board in its democratic fashion would say, let's sock it to the out-of-staters. So they would raise tuition. So the gap between in and out-of-state grew substantially. And then even if you give the same percentage increase, it continues to widen. Mm-hmm. So we really began to price ourselves out of the market for many out-of-state students in the 80s especially and into the 90s. I think we hit a peak freshman class size, must have been, well, it was in the 70s. I don't remember exactly which year it was, 76 or 78. Mm. We had 400 some odd students in our freshman class, which was really big. Mm-hmm. We had been running around 300, and it went to 480 in 1 year, just a bump. And that was the end of the bubble at that point. Uh-huh. If not burst, at least began to leak a little. At one point, the Honors College population was 60% out of state and 40% in state. Uh-huh. And it's nowhere near that now, although it's a little better now than it was 5 years ago.
What was the, in those early years when you were here, what was the main pitch to attract students to the Honors College? What was the argument that you gave? You did freshman orientation at that time?
Those were people who had already accepted membership.
Okay, all right. But in terms of, what did you see as the biggest advantage of the Honors College here at MSU?
We have always emphasized, above all else, two components. Flexibility that students have in building their academic program. And in the old days, that meant they didn't have to complete the University College Humanities sequence or the Social Science sequence or the Natural Science sequence. They could take alternative work for that. We also emphasized the enhanced access to small honors courses, and all of the old university college departments offered honors sequences. Mm-hmm. Humanities had a full year-long sequence, social science, natural science, and ATL for that matter. But so our members had an option of taking alternative work or these smaller, more interactive honors sections, of course. So we always put the emphasis there. It didn't hurt to tell people that they had a priority in enrollment, that they were more likely to get the classes they wanted. Some students were really attracted to the enhanced and earlier access to graduate level courses and to research activities, so we emphasized all of those, but the real emphasis was always on flexibility and access to smaller, more in-depth and more interactive coursework.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there was also, within their own curriculum, they could design or modify it to some degree to their own personal interest?
With the approval of a departmental honors advisor. Right. Say we have departmental honors advisors in all the areas, and that's probably the area in which today things aren't done as effectively as they were back then. We know, for example, of a student who completed his bachelor's degree in chemistry here in the early 70s and had a lot of graduate work in chemistry. The chemistry departmental honors advisor had said, this would be better than that, this would be better than that. And when he completed his bachelor's degree and was admitted to the PhD program at that technical institute in Massachusetts. Oh, MIT.
MIT.
He met with his doctoral committee the first time, and they went over his transcript. They said, okay, here's the two courses you need to take and write your dissertation. So that's all he had to do for a PhD.
Wow.
So
that was good advice.
Yes, yes. So, and I don't think that happens as frequently today as it did then. We had one student who came here whose name I don't remember. I remember the incident at orientation programs, but I didn't know him well. He came here from somewhere in Oklahoma, I think. And his very first year, he was taking graduate courses in mathematics. He didn't complete a degree here. He left and went on to a